is Michael Imperioli, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio.
Hey, it's Adam Shartoff, special bonus episode this week. The name of the show, Film Wax Radio, the episode number 462. On occasion, I have to crowbar special episodes in, usually once a month or something like that, because of all the content I'm creating and the I've taken on obligations, etc. So, like, for instance, today, this is incredible. You can't say no. I mean, I got to learn how to say no, but I don't say no. And I get an opportunity to bring on an incredible storyteller, filmmaker like Sally Potter. And I'm not going to say no. I just can't do it. It's not in my fiber. It's not in my DNA. I can't do it. So I say, of course I'll bring on Sally Potter. Are you kidding me? So what happens is the publicists, the people that organize these things, they get her to me on Thursday this past week. That's 3 days ago on the 15th of February. Her film, which is called The Party, opens on Friday the 16th. So that's literally overnight. I've already got a show that I've got to put up Thursday the 15th. So it's too late to put on the Sally Potter on that week's show, which would be, of course, ideal so we could properly promote the film before it opens. Can't do it, though. But what we can do is put up a special episode. Even on President's Day 2018, we can put up a show on President's Day to say, you know what, Sally Potter's film is out there right now in theaters, which is the case, and we want you to go check out and support one of the great art house filmmakers of our day. This is the woman who made Orlando, for Christ's sakes. It's one of the films that made me into a art house film lover, frankly. So Orlando, which came out in 1992, was a film I remember seeing and just being utterly blown away by it. And it was one of many films that were coming out in the late 80s and early 90s that really had an impact on me as a film lover. And some, 25 years later, to find myself talking to Sally Potter was a delight. So we'll talk about that in a minute. We're going to also have on the film programmer over at at the Jewish Community Center, also known as the JCC. Every year, they host a film festival called the Real Abilities Film Festival. This year, it's running from March 8th through the 14th, and it's the 10th festival. Now, several years back, early on in the maybe the third or fourth festival, I myself even hosted some screenings. And so I feel like I have a real friendship with the people that run it and a connection to the film festival. And I feel like it's one of the really great institutions in New York. So they run all the screenings out of the JCC in their theater, but they also have all these satellite screenings around. And so in all the boroughs and even in Long Island and in Westchester, the outer parts of New York City. So it's wonderful, making it easier for people to go see screenings involving the subject of disability, whatever that may look like. And the films are, so all deal with that. Again, that's running from March 8th through the 14th. Tickets are available for all the films right now if you go to the website, realabilities.org/New York. We'll get to all that. The opening night film in the introduction for that segment. But again, first up here is Sally Potter. This is a stunning film, stunning cast. It's called The Party again, and it stars, get this, Patricia Clarkson, Bruno Ganz, Cherry Jones, Emily Mortimer, Cillian Murphy, Kristin Scott Thomas, and Timothy Spall, all of whom individually I would have an entire podcast episode around, let alone Sally Potter. So, and it is currently in theaters right now. In New York, it's at the Angelica Film Center and at the landmark 57th Street. It's a brand new theater all the way on the west side of Manhattan on 57th Street. It's currently playing at those two theaters, and I believe it's at the Landmark in Los Angeles. So those are the places it's playing, and if people go see the movie, perhaps it'll open in more theaters, but that's how it works. Sally Potter is an important filmmaker. Again, the film is called The Party. It's being distributed by our friends over at Roadside Attractions. It's a dark comedy which revolves around Janet, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, who is hosting an intimate gathering of her friends in her London home to celebrate her political ascension, while her husband Bill, played by the remarkable actor Timothy Spall, one of Mike Lee's regulars, seems preoccupied. Janet's acerbic best friend, April, played by, of course, the great Patricia Clarkson, arrives and others follow, some with their own dramatic news to share. But an announcement by Bill provides a series of revelations that gradually unravel the sophisticated soiree. And a night that began with champagne may end with gunplay. Here is, with no further ado, my conversation with the director of such films as Orlando, The Tango Lesson, The Man Who Cried, Yes, Rage, Ginger and Rosa, and now The Party, the one and only Sally Potter, here on no other podcast, just Film Wax Radio.
Hey, bro.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Where's Janet?
Doing a Thatcher, proving she can still rustle up a canopy in the kitchen when necessary.
It's been too long.
Possibly. It's a triumph for womankind.
Well, for any kind, for that matter.
Oh, wow.
Not a bit surprised.
Really? Well, I am.
I may not believe in politics, but I absolutely do believe in you.
I have an announcement.
What is it, darling?
I'm leaving you. Another woman.
During the campaign, while I was on the road, and you kept telling me I could do it.
You did do it.
And you were doing it while I did it.
You stole my wife! She chose me.
Martha, you knew. Because I was so dedicated to saving our country, you decided to let them do it in your flat.
I thought better than in your house. You're a first-class lesbian and a second-rate thinker. Must be all those women study.
Hi, Sally.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Adam. It's really nice to meet you. Congratulations on your new film.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't want to waste much time because I know we're limited, but I should tell you that as a young man in 1992, when I was kind of coming into my own and discovering art house films, independent film, and I had heard about Orlando and I watched it, it was kind of a transformative type of thing for me.
That's very nice to hear.
Seriously, you know, so I hadn't seen any film or actor quite like this before, and it really is. And then, of course, Quentin Crisp. But that's another podcast that I'd like to get you on to talk about.
Okay.
So is this your 7th or 8th feature?
8th. It's the 8th.
Okay. Because, you know, it's been like over a span of 25 years, and I wonder if it didn't feel very, very gratifying to do something so economical and relatively swift like The Party.
Yes, I've got more and more interested in the minimal approach, no waste filmmaking, and seeing what you can squeeze out of an apparently limited situation and create a very rich experience. I've become a little oversaturated with too much stimulation and in large and long films, and have become appreciative of brevity and doing things in the simplest way possible, but with wonderful collaborations with excellent people. So that was part of this project. The shoot was swift, however, but the writing was not particularly quick. However, it never really is. That's what takes the longest, as you know.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. Everything about the film does kind of feel economical, from the running time to the fact that you chose to shoot it in black and white to that it all takes place, all set in one location. Another thing, I must assume you really had to really lean, not that you would normally, but you must really had to have leaned on your producers, who I know you've collaborated with before. I mean, to get this ensemble together in a two-week shooting, over a course of a two-week shooting schedule?
Well, the actors all agreed to work for exactly the same rate of pay, and okay. I said I would too, so that we were all on a level playing field on that side of the camera, on both sides of the camera.
Sure.
And it was, I think, you know, a short, relatively short time commitment for them, but very, very intense. And I think that creates a very good atmosphere. So mm-hmm. people really dive in, or they did anyway, this group did, with great commitment and bravery and intensity, and had a great time, actually, knowing it wasn't going to linger around forever, their experience. And also that they weren't going to be in a kind of alienated shooting setup, which a lot of them told me about, actually, during this shoot, by contrast, saying that they really don't like the experience of being shut away in a trailer somewhere and called out just to do their bit and then sent away again. So they never really know what the totality is that they're working on. Whereas with this one, everyone was kind of on all the time, on set all the time, watching what everyone else was doing. And I had one stipulation, which is give everything, give 100%, whether the camera is on you or not on you. And then whoever is on camera will be fed by the work of the other people off camera. And that's a, on the surface of it, a very tiring thing to do for an actor, to do full-on acting when it's nobody will ever see it. But in fact, it was inspiring for everybody.
Yeah, I guess the way you're describing it, it almost feels like they were doing theater for maybe no audience other than the crew, but that ensemble sense of what is created, the intimacy that is created during the production of a play. It sounds like in a very, again, economical amount of time, you sort of achieved that.
I think, yes, definitely the feeling of an ensemble, of being a troupe, if you like, or a company, that's definitely there and is much more common in the theatre. What's different, of course, is that in this instance, this wasn't about a troupe with a fourth wall with an audience standing at a distance watching. This was a camera forensically examining the most minute details of what each actor was doing and expressing. That makes the experience, and was right in the room with them and around them and behind them and in front of them. And that makes the demands on the actors much greater. And the atmosphere and the experience in the round, so it's like sort of 360-degree top-to-toe acting. You never know from which direction you will be seen or which part of your body and so on. And that keeps, again, everybody very, very alert.
Yeah, and you chose to shoot it on a soundstage. Did that help achieve these goals that you're describing?
Yes, it did. I originally thought it should be on location, but then most of the locations that I found with the designer, Carlos Conti, seemed to be underneath a flight path, to the point that I began to feel the whole of London was underneath the flight path, which it probably is. And we could not afford to stop shooting, not for a moment, for that reason, you know, because we would stop if there was something I needed to work on or change or develop, but not to stop for sound. So in the end, it was the best decision to work in a set, and it actually was very enjoyable because we could make the dimensions exactly as we wanted and bring together the best of several locations that we had found, reproduce those in some way. And at the same time, I didn't have like flying walls or ceilings where you could bring cameras in over the top or anything. It was built solidly in three dimensions, but to dimensions that were conducive for a lot of camera movement in and out of rooms and so on.
Right. In other words, people weren't tripping over each other in these tight little London what I think of typically English townhouse spaces, you know.
Yeah. No, they were small. They were realistically small, okay. But there were lots of doorways. That was the trick.
I'm noting these tricks down for future needs. And well, while you guys were contained in this space shooting the film, outside it sounded like the country recently had voted for Brexit. Did that?
That happened halfway through the shoot.
Oh, it was during it. Okay.
Yes, it was halfway through the shoot, and it was a complete shock and surprise to everybody. Nobody thought it was going to happen.
Yeah, we had one of those too.
I know.
But
yeah, we're all suffering the consequences.
Well, since you already were halfway through the production, and I guess there you're saying sort of around the halfway point of the 2 weeks that you're shooting,
yes.
All of a sudden this bomb, I'm sorry for that picture, that image, but it sort of dropped on everybody.
Yes.
Did it seep into the production at all, do you feel like?
No, it didn't, because everything was already written and we knew where we were going with it, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. But what the actors asked me was, did you know this was going to happen? Because they suddenly felt that the film was sort of about it. It wasn't right. directly, it but I think it was about the divisions in society in the UK, person against person, man against woman, man against man, woman against woman, and so on, that a part and parcel of this culture of divisiveness that Brexit symbolises and possibly some of the situation here does as well. So I think it began to feel very prescient, not exactly prophetic, but certainly of the moment, like a snapshot of a feeling in the air
right.
in the moment.
Yeah, there was a crackling, if you will. The film crackles a lot. I'm speaking with Sally Potter. It's a thrill. As I said, I'm really just so excited to talk to you. We're Skyping right now. You're in LA, I assume?
Yes.
But I also read in the production notes that probably in part because of the brief time you had with this incredible cast that you assembled, Timothy Spall, Kristin Scott, I mean, it's just Patricia Clarkson, Bruno Ganz. I mean, my mind, when I read this, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to see it. But you had Skype sessions with a number of the actors or all of the actors to prepare, I suppose, to save some time?
Well, no, I went to them, first of all, wherever they were, or they came to me. I always meet with actors in person and do whatever I can with them in person, individually, before putting them together, to really make sure that each actor is completely, solidly grounded in their part and in the film as a whole, and that we've dealt with any issues that they have individually. I do a lot of listening and a lot of very careful looking at the actor and finding out what works for them and what helps them to go as far as they can possibly go and take lots of risks and feel safe enough to take risks.
Yes.
But due to all of our schedules, that often had to be followed through by Skype. So I once see. We'd had an in-person meeting or two or a day or two together or whatever, they would work on it and read what they were doing. They would then have a bunch of other questions. So I'd do the follow-throughs on Skype. And really, I would just work as much as people needed to individually before they all came together for the very brief amount of rehearsal. But it goes so much faster when you've done that one-on-one preparation is what I found.
Sure. That makes complete sense.
And it's surprisingly rare. Almost all the actors said to me that on most films they never ever get that opportunity. They're lucky if they get half an hour with the director, or you know, they do their costume fittings and all that, but they don't get the real preparation unless they're working in the theatre.
I also wanted to mention Emily Mortimer and Cillian Murphy, who I left out before. And Cherry Jones. Oh my God, definitely not least Cherry Jones.
And Kristin Scott Thomas. I mean, they really are all outstanding. They're wonderful, and they were very, very generous, actually, all of them with their energy and with their time.
Can I ask a question? And there's little implication, but I would imagine, Sally, as a filmmaker in the UK making this film, that casting. Well, I know you did this as well in Ginger and Rosa, but you cast British and American actors side by side.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how much of a practical decision that is in terms of financing or any. Does that matter? Is that something you're considering, or is this completely done in a very organic, you know, approach?
It's pretty organic. I mean, I don't think it's certainly not tactical.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's just about finding the right, the best, the only perhaps person for that particular role. And I wanted to have a mix of nationalities and accents in the room because that's very London. That's typical London.
True.
And it'd be very, very rare to be in a party in London and have only English people in the room. I've never experienced that, I think. So, but I think, you know, look, the industry as a whole is extremely strategic and financed around, you know, supposedly A-list, B-list, and these very, very insulting lists, you know.
Yes.
And I, frankly, detest all of that side of stuff.
I would imagine you would.
It's awful. I think it's demeaning for the actors. It's treating them like baggage and commodities. And also, it's totally unreliable. You know, lots of films that have got supposedly big name stars in fail hopelessly at the box office, and lots of films which have complete unknowns in become surprise hits. So nobody, frankly, really knows anything. Mm-hmm. So one may as well go for the right people for the job and for the project and try and do something that feels as if it's done for passion and principle rather than for money, frankly.
I knew you were all about passion and principle, Miss Potter. I, you know, didn't mean to certainly imply anything else. But, you know, it occurs to me because you got everything just right. You know, this is a very well-calibrated cast, you know. Speaking of which, the tone of the film is also really important. You describe it, or the film is described, as correct me if I get this wrong, but as a drama wrapped within a comedy wrapped around
a tragedy is how I describe it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Groping for the right words.
I was groping.
Quite fit into any genre, but yeah. But I think that comes close.
Satire?
Kind of, although I find that satire as a genre tends to come from a more cynical place, whereas I think this film comes from
Hello?
The world they are inhabiting, although they're falling down, you know, they're failing to live up to their own principles, but it isn't because they haven't got them. And I think looking at people's disappointments and where they don't manage to be as good as they would like to be is an interesting terrain to explore and a very necessary one. Because I think everything often in screenplay writing and in films, black and white, in other words, actually that's the wrong word to use, good and bad, evil and fabulous, nice and nasty, get polarized so that one character is entirely one or entirely the other, rather than being the mixture that most of us actually are. Most of us are capable of being both loyal and occasionally treacherous, or telling the truth but occasionally fibbing a little bit, you know. It's sort of exploring that kind of fragility, I think, and complexity that also is very, very rich for an actor.
Well, the British have, you know, they really do satire really well.
I'll take the word satire as well. It's just a linguistic bit of fiddling around to try and find the right, most precise word. But maybe it's a mixture of all of those things.
Well, the film, it's called The Party, and I will certainly go over the synopsis in my intro, which I'll record later on, but so that we don't have to worry about talking about the specific plot, although, you know, it takes place during a party, you know, and it opens theatrically here in the States. By the way, did it already have a run in the UK?
Yes, it did. It opened late fall. And it did very, very well. In the UK, it's also already been playing in the German-speaking territories, in France, in Italy, in Spain now, in Greece, and so on. So it's been open pretty much across Europe already.
Well, I'm glad it got here. And it's opening, I was going to say, on this tomorrow, as I record this, tomorrow, the Friday, the 16th of February, in theaters in how many cities? Do you know? I can talk to, of course.
I think it's just LA and New York initially.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll do my best to certainly help it along in my own little way, of course.
Thank you.
My pleasure, you know. And now that you were able to do this so quickly, well, I keep saying that, but you did already remind me that this took a long time to write and get going. So, but the pace of that and the spontaneity of this production, are you going to try to repeat this soon? I hope that we'll see a more kind of Sally Potter films than the alternative.
I always wish I could speed up my process, but in fact, as soon as I finished The Party, I started writing another screenplay.
Well, you had another one, that's right.
That built in on the comedic vein, but as it happens, I had anyway wrote The Party in parallel with another film, which I also have in my pocket. So I have two feature films in my pocket, unmade feature films in my pocket at the moment, and hope to get going on at least one of them pretty soon.
Right, you throw the pasta, as you call it, against the wall when you have a number of projects at once sometimes, and you will see which takes.
Well, exactly, and there are moments, you know, for a film to take off when you kind of somehow hit a nerve or or give people pleasure or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And it's good to, in a way, to go with that energy and not fight it too much.
I'm just going to keep stalling until we're interrupted, because I really like talking to you.
Well, I have not. I'm not keeping an eye on the clock,
it's
so
okay.
I don't know.
No,
I'm not sure what time we have. But
I'm just kidding around with you.
Because I think there'll be a signal.
You've got your hands full, I'm sure, with lots of other folks wanting to talk to you. But this was great. I really appreciate it. As I said, the party opens in New York and LA on Friday, February 16th, thanks to Roadside Attractions. And it was just a delight. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye then.
Take
Bye.
Care. Bye, Sally.
We shared everything.
Everything. Did you sleep together?
Once. It was fun, though.
What's happening?
Revenge.
No, I don't believe in revenge. I never have.
Although it might have a deleterious effect on your career strategy, you could consider murder.
Tom is one of those amoral money men.
Intellectuals, you think you're so superior.
Money bought this house, not ideas.
Truth, is that a concept that any of you have heard of?
This is our last supper, in a 21st century postmodern, post-feminist sort of way. If you really want to run this country, you will have to do something about your hair.
I was working day and night for our party. I thought you were a sister.
Well, that dates you, Janet. Sisterhood is a very aging concept, sweetheart.
Isaac Zablocki is the director of film programs at the JCC, also known as the Jewish Community Center, which is on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Please go to realabilities.org/New York. Now, I just want to mention that the opening night film, which I actually have seen, is called Keep the Change, which premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival. These films stand on their own. They're, streamlined films. They are conventional films in the sense of their dramas and comedies and whatnot. They're shorts, they're features, they're documentaries, and they could play in any film festival, truly. But the Real Abilities Film Festival is remarkable because it really brings in all these wonderful people and filmmakers and sparks the conversations around disability in this day and age. And what's great is that you can probably, if you win every year, you could see how each year, you know, disability becomes less of a kind of an outsider marginalized issue and becomes more streamlined. It's fantastic. Like, even I've seen it since the time that I've become associated with the Real Abilities Film Festival. It's presented by the Marlene Meyerson JCC Manhattan. This is the 10th festival, as I mentioned, and is dedicated to promoting awareness and appreciation of the lives, stories, and artistic expressions of people with different abilities. The festival presents award-winning films in various locations throughout the New York metropolitan area. Discussions and other engaging programs bring the community together to explore, discuss, and celebrate the diversity of our shared human experience. Please visit realabilities.org/New York for tickets and more details. Right now, my conversation with Isaac Zablocki here on FilmWax Radio. You'll be the only one. Oh, I don't try. I have a knack, I guess. Isaac Zablocki, we go back a while, right? It's got to be 5 or 6 years.
I think so. You were probably the second or third year of the festival.
You think so? It had to be early, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You may be right. Yes, yeah, so maybe seven. It's true. And so Real Abilities Film Festival, it's a thing. It's this institution now, right? It's like
It's all over the city, and it's national. We just actually went. We don't even know how to call it now because it's international. We're in Canada. Beyond the United States, we're in Canada. Mm-hmm. And now we're in Latin America as well. We just went to Chile. We had our first screening, and Mexico City's having a festival there. So it's expanding.
Across the Americas.
Across the Americas.
Pan-American or whatever. Well, that's it. What is your role here at the Jewish Community Center, also known as the JCC?
I run the film program here. I'm the senior director of film programs of the Carol Zabar Film Center. And related to the Zabars, yes.
Makes sense.
She is the wife of Saul. And we run major festivals throughout the year and have ongoing screenings on a weekly basis. We're getting very engaged with everything that's going on or went on with Lincoln Plaza's closing and trying to figure out how we could help fill the gap for the community here, which we're very concerned about. And our biggest festival of the year is the Real Abilities Film Festival.
Oh, really?
It has turned into a real beast of a festival.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly filled a gap. I mean, you know, you think about how is it possible that there hasn't been a festival like this for decades. But then again, it's also about the number of films that have been out there dealing with the subjects of disability, right? They've really exploded over the years too.
For sure. We get hundreds of submissions. I mean, every year, 1 year we got over 1,000 submissions.
1,000?
Yeah.
With some, I imagine a certain percentage of those were probably very loosely within the category. People do feel compelled to submit to as many festivals as they possibly can.
That's true. And that was how we kind of lowered, after that year, we figured out how to lower it to make it very clear that this needs to be a disability film. Yeah. And I mean, we made it clear to begin with.
Because you have to watch all those films. You have to watch them all.
We have to have somebody watch all those films. But now we make sure we get great submissions because often these films are not taken anywhere else, unfortunately, because either the one disability slot has been filled by a major festival or people just don't know how to approach the topic or they're really afraid of the topic. Like literally will reject it for those reasons. And we get great premieres because of that, which is great for us, but not really. Our goal is to bring this to the mainstream.
Yeah, with big time actors and everything.
I
have to tell you something coincidental that occurred yesterday, which, knowing that I was already coming here and meeting with you, is that just a publicist sent me a film from the Tribeca Film Festival called Keep the Change, which I had not seen, and I just sort of thought, that it was from this particular publicist, and they've done me a lot of solids, and so I've said, yeah, I'll take a look at it, and then just watched it, which is rare that I watched it as quickly as I did, and you were nodding because you remember it's this year's opening night film for Real Abilities 2018, but it was the real other issue with it or component to it, which is so unique, is that it was shot here at the JCC.
Yeah, if you want to figure out how to become the opening night film for Real Abilities, make your film here with the community.
It's going to feel very incestuous.
I watched the trailer that went live yesterday, and I and the opening shot of the trailer is of the building, and I'm like, okay, this is the right choice for opening night. It's going to be a real homecoming for the film.
Yeah,
it says everything about the community, and it's also actually the kind of film we like to show. I was looking at Tribeca's reason for giving it the award, and one of the main reasons was the portrayal, the authenticness that this film brought in a very fresh way. And it wasn't some Hollywood actors playing people with disabilities. It was people from this community on the spectrum who are playing people
essentially
on the spectrum.
Acting. Not even playing themselves, but acting, portraying roles of people with autism. The actors happen to also have be on the spectrum, as you said.
Which brings it a reality and brings it a human side that I think dimension. Often gets lost.
Right. It's a good film. It was very good. In fact, I also, to take it even further, I'll say that not only does it portray, are we getting to a point where films like Keep the Change are finally, I would say, giving these characters a lot of dignity,
And what better way than to cast people that are on the spectrum, you know, to give them a shot at these roles, right? And also the role, the one of the main leads, it's I suppose you could say a romantic comedy, but the actor who plays the lead character, his name is, I know it's Cohen. Cohen is his last name, right?
Yeah.
I'm blanking on his first name. But he is from a wealthy family. And, you know, obviously he's high functioning and it's not an issue, but he's, you know, he's got a lot of money and he knows it. And he acts, you know, it's just you don't usually see that. You know, you don't see somebody who's, you know, a wealthy character. You know, like it was an unusual.
And I mean, realistic to the fact that a person with a disability can be absolutely anyone.
It could be
a wealthy person, a poor person.
Yeah.
It can be really, they say you met a person with autism, you've met one person with autism. There's no, you can't like in any way decide, oh, I saw Dustin Hoffman's portrayal of autism and now I get autism.
Right. It was a step towards this different. Though. I mean, we can always look back though that Rain Man was one of many steps to get to the point we are now. So, right? So without Rain Man, maybe there wouldn't have been a Keep the Change. We don't know.
It's a struggle. It's a struggle. And I wonder how much damage Rain Man's done to the autistic community.
Do you think?
I think for a lot of people, that is their only way of understanding it. And it is not the reality.
So it's a double-edged sword in a way because, again, it did maybe open up the idea of, I forget, they kind of used him as this sort of holier
savant.
Jesus type of character almost, right? Right. And now, though, there is a plethora of films dealing with the subject of autism. There's countless films dealing on with that subject.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, we have quite a few this year. It's definitely a topic with growing numbers, something that's on the mind of a lot of Americans.
The irony is, Isaac, is the more things that are diagnosed, the better your festival gets because you have, there's more diagnoses.
More need. Definitely, it's one of these festivals that I hope someday that will become unnecessary. I hope it becomes obsolete.
Wow. And, well, thank you.
All these films are in the mainstream.
Right.
It's double-sided.
David Cohen. That was the character I was trying to remember. Played. This is, the opening night film. It's called Keep the Change, which premiered last spring at the Tribeca Film Festival. And David is an upper-class charmer, struggling to hide his high-functioning autism. Forced by his parents to attend Connections, which is a support group for those on the autism spectrum, David falls in love with Sarah, a sheltered young woman who challenges his identity as normal, quote unquote. I don't have the actors' names here, but anyway, it was a lot of fun to watch that film.
I believe their real names are David and Sarah in real life. But it's completely scripted. The movie is, I know,
David
100%
Lisa,
scripted.
I think. And the very touching ending, I thought very, very moving.
Yeah, it's a well-written story that actually comes together very nicely. Yeah. It was a short film originally that we showed here a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
And also made within us, and then she developed it. Rachel Israel, the director, developed it into a short. Mm-hmm. Rachel has been involved with the program here for many years.
Right. Where are the so back in when, like we talked about at the beginning, six, seven years ago when we met, and when FilmWax did a number of screenings in Brooklyn, I think I screened three films over a course of a weekend during the festival. So you did all these satellite screenings. Are you still doing that?
We're still doing that. It's our way. It's not just to do the satellite screenings for that sake, but really to make it accessible, mm-hmm. to bring the festival to the community. So we're in all the boroughs. We're in Rockland County, Westchester, Long Island, so the entire New York metro area, over 30 locations, and we feel it's part of our mission to do this.
Yeah. It's a little late now, right, this year?
As far as joining?
Right.
Some locations will still join online. We're in print for our brochure, but we'll definitely continue to add on a couple of locations there.
So speaking in general, if you're listening and you're in a programmer or you have a special connection or just interest in this subject matter and you want to get in touch with there's a way through the website, I'm sure, and specifically through the Real Ability site to get in touch about hosting screenings. I guess the only thing is, essentially, is you need a space that it can accommodate those with disabilities.
An accessible location. I remember that was a challenge that you were looking for in Brooklyn.
It turned out, I found a great space, and it was perfect. But a lot of the screenings take place in right here at the JCC.
So the JCC screens all the films. We're the main location. So we screen absolutely everything. The other locations
might do repeat screenings.
Do whatever they want to screen. Some screen more, some screen one, some screen seven. And they help actually... Our final list is decided by the locations. So based on the needs that and the wants of the different locations of all 30 of them, we kind of get our short list down to a final list, which makes it an interesting part of the process and a little bit more democratic in some ways.
Real Abilities Film Festival runs from March 8th through the 14th, 2018. And the JCC is located at 334 Amsterdam Avenue, which is 78th Street on the Upper West Side. Do you want to talk about some of the other highlights of the festival?
So our closing night film is Scaffolding, which is a New York premiere. It won the first prize at the Jerusalem Film Festival this summer. It's an Israeli film. Most of our films...
Killing two birds with one stone there.
Yeah, definitely. It fits nicely in our community. But it was one of these films that is very realistic and very authentic. And didn't even realize it was making a film that was right for our festival. The disability portrayed in it it's about a young man in high school with learning differences. And I'm someone who also has learning differences. Uh-huh. And I found the portrayal to be so real and really hits the nail on the head as far as how this young man is... doesn't understand things the same way and how that affects his entire behavior and how the right kind of teachers and the right kind of setting can actually bring out a quite brilliant side of him.
So that's the closing night film.
Scaffolding. We have a lot of international films because I'll note that feature narratives. We have a lot of documentaries that are American-made, but narratives, there are not enough American-made films on the topic of disability.
So really, Keep the Change is an exception.
Keep the Change is an exception, and I'm glad to see that it's getting a lot of attention because it really, if it gets out there, hopefully they'll realize that this is a topic that actually has a lot of people interested in, and disabilities make up 20% of America's population, and we can definitely find a way for that niche to support a film.
It's safe to say, though, that disabilities like, let's say, autism, it's hit the mainstream. It's right there. It's a TV series, I think, on what the main character is.
It's getting there. Once again, portrayals sometimes get questionable, I'd say. I know there's a lot of criticism, too, from the community. But it's definitely, I think, a word
that's good, though, right? Because, you know, it's good if there's somebody is doing it, and then if there's criticism, and then if it's taken into consideration, the criticism, if people that are the producers and are open to listening and to, you know, doing better.
This is a big debate. Yeah. I mean, if it's not an authentic portrayal, if it's not a responsible portrayal, is this something that's doing good for the community?
Right.
I know a lot of people from within the community want to see more realistic portrayals and not the kind of cliches that Hollywood sometimes puts together, not the Hallmarky approach, which, and these are things that our festival stands for.
Yeah.
I think part of it is also leveling the playing field for a lot of, for these filmmakers and for the actors who are often not given an opportunity. And if you're always going to hire, I don't know, Tom Cruise to play the guy in the wheelchair, then...
Now, he was the brother of the guy that was...
Born on the 4th of July. He seems to... See, I read recently a statistic that playing a person with a disability raises your percentage of getting an Oscar by a large amount.
Okay, so if you're an actor, note that down. No, wait, that's wrong. I'm sorry. You don't...
That's exploitation. I get it. I get why I think acting is acting, and I think actors can play absolutely anyone at times. I think it just needs to be done in a responsible way, and I think actors with disabilities should be given the same opportunity.
Yes.
They should say, oh, wait a minute, an actor with disability can be as big of a star as Tom Cruise,
right,
and should be able to audition and should be able to be considered and should be able to be embraced by the public,
mm-hmm,
if given the right opportunities. And I think this is something that casting agents and Hollywood in general hasn't really embraced yet.
All right, well, some other highlights. You have a couple of other films that are...
So we have a huge Chinese film called Ballad from Tibet.
Uh-huh.
Huge production, beautiful film about a group of young kids from a school for the blind. Two of them who are really blind actually in real life in the film are on a journey to sing at this American Idol kind of show in China.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great film for the whole family. This is a U.S. premiere of the film. And it's done a lot of international festivals and just tells like a fabulously beautifully produced story. And of course, very relevant, very moving. It happens to be a different culture, and that's also kind of part of the exciting side of it, is seeing these other cultures, and has a nice portrayal of children with disabilities. And
Ballad from Tibet.
Plays it nicely, yeah. Ballad from Tibet.
Yeah.
And that's an example of kind of like the uplifting films. Like people think, oh, it's a film festival about people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. These are all going to be challenges. This one's not about challenges anymore than any film has a challenge and an obstacle.
Sure. Right. And as you mentioned, breaking certain stereotypes that they all have to be kind of morose or downers. The films are often like the one I mentioned, the one we're
talking
about.
Keep the Change.
Yeah, it's a comedy. It's a romantic comedy.
It's a comedy, right. We look for those films that will surprise you and will
Jessica
engage
Walter
you.
From Arrested Development plays the mom in the in that movie.
Yep. Yeah.
Not the Chinese one, folks.
From Keep the Change, yeah. Yeah. She's playing that role.
She's playing more dramatic.
A rich mother.
Yeah. It might have been and she's from a different generation. So I was going to say maybe that role was a little bit cliche, but she is from a generation where I think wouldn't be so unusual if somebody like that would have those opinions.
Absolutely.
Or concerns, right?
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I've seen,
I'm sure you
I've
see
seen
it
the
here.
Real thing.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. Any others that you wanted to highlight?
So a thing that I must highlight, of course, is always short films.
Sure.
And I know this is always a tough sell for film festivals, and we get amazing short films. One of them is nominated for an Oscar, but just in general, we've put together, I think now, three compilations of short films. We have a record number of films that we included because we just couldn't let any of these great films go.
Wow.
And you get a wide range of topics through the short films, and you see the high quality of these films that will engage you. Some of them are doing groundbreaking things. One of them in particular is about a date between it's called Intimacy. It's a British film, and it's a date between a blind woman and a deaf man, I believe. I hope I don't have that backwards. And it's told from each person's perspective. So she's not seeing him. So mm-hmm. Anytime we get her perspective, the screen goes black and we only hear. And he's not hearing her. So anytime we get his perspective from his point of view, the sound goes dead. At first, I thought there was something wrong with
the file
with my
is not
machine.
Defective.
And I was like,
right.
You know, this file's wrong. And
No,
it's the way they made it. And I thought, it's very creative. Just tells a good story and uses cinema in such a creative way that
that's
I
very
really
clever.
Applaud it.
I don't think I've ever seen that done. I've seen where the camera was used for blindness like that, where it's either distorted greatly or it's been blackened for blindness. But it's a clever device.
Yeah, yeah, and to show that interaction, how they are each not understanding each other or missing something about each other.
It's kind of interactive, the that film.
Right,
because it's putting you. It's asking you to engage in that way.
You know? Yeah, it puts you in their positions, and I like that. And I like that they took the challenge to kind of challenge the audience like that. Yeah, we have also short films for kids.
I was going to mention Alphabet Mission to Mars because it's a stop animation, and my son is into stop animation.
We have a couple of stop animation. That one was made, but it's not about any disability.
But it's made by
a young man with autism.
Okay,
and it's a great film. I know my son would enjoy it. I enjoyed it myself, and a lot of the short films for kids, I say, are actually for everyone, and they're for families. So we're inviting everyone to come to those,
sure.
But also making it kid friendly. And
what day is that?
And that's on the Sunday of the festival at 11:30 a.m. here.
Okay.
There'll be a family art day because we're going to have an exhibit that relates also to the to the festival, and they're going to do some programs. And then at 11:30, there's these short films, and we make it free, so it's completely accessible, and as many people as possible can come to this. Good to reserve in advance. We will have a list in advance.
Especially if it's free, then it's
yeah.
Well, again, I'm going to remind people that the Real Abilities Film Festival, 10th
annual.
Are you celebrating it?
Big celebration.
Because 10 years is a milestone.
Milestone, for sure. And we're honoring Marlee Matlin at opening night.
Oh, really?
Thanks to the Mayor's Office for Media and Entertainment.
She did a lot, too, I would say.
She's the last Oscar winner with a disability.
Oh,
That's 30 years ago. That's striking.
That is
shocking. Yeah. And since then, many have won for portrayal of people with disabilities. But this is exactly what I was talking about before.
It's a really good way of illustrating your point, because that's really rather shocking.
Yeah, and she's an amazing advocate and has had an amazing career since then, and has really brought disabilities into the mainstream and show that this is something that's completely marketable. Like I don't feel like her career has been limited at all by her disability or that her following is any smaller because she has a disability. Mm-hmm. She has really shown how you can be a fabulous actress and get fabulous roles with or without a disability.
We've already said that there are also these satellite screenings that are all over the metropolitan area, the Manhattan, of course, Bronx, all the boroughs, all five boroughs, as well as locations in Long Island and Westchester.
And even Rockland. We've expanded to Rockland. we're everywhere.
Infringing on the next city.
Yeah, I try to consolidate every year, but it just keeps growing. There's demand. We have a film starring Elizabeth Moss that I promise you nobody's seen. It's called Mad to Be Normal. And it's about David Tennant, who stars as Arde Lang.
Uh-huh.
And it's really has an amazing cast. And he was a doctor in the 70s who tried to use LSD to treat people who were mentally disturbed, as it was called back then.
Right.
So it's like a star-studded film, and
it was everyone else that was disturbed. They needed to get over it.
Yeah.
Right. Now nobody's disturbed anymore.
Yeah. This is a controversial approach, of course.
And, yeah.
we're not trying to tell people to use LSD, but it's definitely an engaging and a high-level film, UK production. We have a documentary called Mind Over Matter that's about a young man who's has cerebral palsy and wants to be a rock star and learns to play the guitar, and his dream is to open for Korn, and Korn play a part in this in this documentary and are actively engaged.
Mm-hmm.
We have a film that tells the story of Chamique Holtzclaw, who's the Michael Jordan of the WNBA, and her battle with mental illness. And hopefully she'll be here for the festival.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot going on, and it's going to be a big celebration. We go beyond the films too and have industry panels where we talk about kind of the state of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing some training sessions and have a day during our opening day. Lights, Camera, Access 2.0 is coming in. It's an organization that works with people with disabilities to enter the film world and make the connections, get trained, learn how to better
they could come on FilmWax Radio.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's something for absolutely everyone. And it's not meant just to be for the disability community. It was actually meant to be a festival that bridges gaps between the mainstream, that people will come for the movies, learn something about people in their community, and at the same time celebrate the people with disabilities who don't really have an opportunity to have such a festival and have a celebration and be truly included. Mm-hmm. So we caption all of our films. We create audio description for our films. Of course, it's wheelchair accessible, and it's a place where everyone can feel a part. One of my favorite moments of the festival was a couple of years ago when we had a dance party after, I think, our opening night film or closing night film. And people with disabilities were never invited to these kinds of parties.
Right.
And a mother saw her child dancing for the first time.
Mm.
And this is just something where, like, yes, we need to be a place where everyone gets to be a part of the picture.
It's very moving. I also should mention that all those years back when I did program, still made friends during that process. And, you know, I still have a good friend, Jean Horn, who's, I think, still involved in your
involved. She's on our screening committee, and one of our favorite people.
Yeah, she's a delightful person. Well, thank you, Isaac. It's great to catch up with you, and we'll keep going.
Thank you for bringing us on.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Please go to iTunes and leave us a star rating and a comment. It's very appreciated. Please do like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. You can easily find it just by searching Film Wax on any platform like that. We have a YouTube channel. And this is interesting. What I've started to do, I mentioned this before, is I've been uploading the podcast every week on YouTube just to, so, you know, people can find it on YouTube as well. If they were searching one of my guests, they could find my conversation with them. But what I decided to start doing a few weeks back is to, rather than upload the entire episode, I'm going to break them into individual segments. So, like, you'll find is this week is the episode 462 will not be uploaded as it's on its own. There'll be two separate segments for episode 4, one with Isaac and one with Sally, which is nice because it gives people an opportunity to kind of just listen to what they want to listen to. They don't have to listen to the whole episode unless they want to. That's happening on YouTube. So that's how I'm going to use that. Now, I just also submitted the podcast to Spotify, so hopefully we'll get on there before long. And, you know, we're also on, of course, Stitcher. So if you're a fan of that, please do put that app on your smartphone and subscribe. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself and the ones you love. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Take care.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs. Broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking. Everything is broken. Broken bottles, broken plates, broken switches, broken gates. With broken hearts, broken words, never meant to be spoken.